sure, other stations promise outstanding content, but when it's time to deliver, they fall flat on their ridiculous faces. Enter LA Talk Radio, a cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk station that delivers totally original content without any commercials. Log on to latalkradio.com and get involved with the best talk radio station on the internet. LA Talk Radio, we say what we want.
The morning show that's on your side. But then again, so is appendicitis.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Charlotte, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Indeed, you are listening to Sam and Charlotte in the Morning. What happened to my mic? Good morning, welcome
Good
to the
morning.
Show. It doesn't sound right.
It's a little crackly.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know
I
what's
think
going
maybe.
On.
Oh,
no, it's okay.
That's better. That's yeah. better, yeah.
Good morning, welcome to the show. No, it's still doing it. It's still doing it as though something's wrong here.
That's a little better.
You think? Okay. Well, maybe if I talk really loud? No, it's still good.
If I talk really loud, everything will be okay.
Yeah. Okay, so let's restart the show. Today's Thursday, June 12th. And we're
it's almost
here
Friday.
With you. It's almost Friday. It's, what is it, Throwback Thursday on Facebook or
it
something?
Is. Yeah. Throwback. Yes.
Yeah.
I
don't know
it.
What that's about. Do you ever put pictures up?
Sometimes on Instagram. If
on
I
Instagram.
Do, it's on Instagram. But I know it's Thursday from Instagram. I think I said this last week too.
Yeah.
Just purely from Instagram because it's all throwback photos.
Yeah.
That's all it is.
Really?
Throw anyone posts. Yeah.
Yeah. That's too much. That's too many social networks for me, you know? I mean, I start posting pictures and then I'm like, I have to remember to put them in like five different accounts. I mean, what is that? Let people find it, you know, on Facebook. If they can't, well, that's tough. You know, you try to give them signs everywhere. On the website, it tells you to go to the Facebook and, you know.
Right.
So.
Too many accounts to keep up with.
It is, you know. And I mean, I use like Hootsuite and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Lets you manage multiple accounts.
Yeah.
But still, you know, I mean,
And still you have to sit down and actually type everything that you want.
Right.
For Hootsuite. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's only for Facebook and Twitter. You
right.
know, so there's no Instagram or anything.
You're right. You can't do that on Instagram because they wanted to keep it kind of present, I guess. That was
right.
the thought behind it, which they've done.
Yeah.
You can't. Schedule posts, but I like Instagram. It's probably my favorite.
Yeah. I don't know. I noticed that Instagram, I guess it's like built for the phone, right? Because when you go online, there's nothing you can do there.
You
can't even put pictures there. It has to come through your phone.
You can go on it on your laptop. Mm. You can go on Instagram.com.
Right.
But I don't know.
But you can't do anything other than see the pictures.
Yeah, I don't think you can.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
There's no, like, the filters that they have and all
these
things.
And that's my favorite thing about it. Because you can make a photo look like it.
Yeah.
It's an amazing photo when it wasn't.
Yeah, that's true, yeah. I'm not crazy about those filters, though, I got to tell you. Some people overuse them, I think, you know?
Yeah.
And the pictures come out looking like crap. But I guess some of them are okay.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
I like it.
Well, I won't take it away from you.
I also
just
like playing around with them to get the coolest filter. And
yeah.
Shows how much time I have, right?
Yeah.
Which I really don't, but I make time for Instagram.
Yeah, exactly. For pictures, we all make time, you know?
Yeah.
It's like funny because you go everywhere and people take like Facebook pictures and you know, or Instagram pictures, you know? You know they're taking it especially for that.
It's
when
sad.
People start taking pictures of their food and stuff. I mean, I'm guilty of that too,
yeah.
you know? But I don't know why it is that we have such an urge to share everything that we do
it's true.
With other people, you know? I think maybe everybody wants to be like a star in their own little way, you know?
Yeah.
Where people know about you and mm-hmm. what you do. And
they want people to know about them. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
Speaking of food, I had the most amazing Rockefeller oysters last night at Lawson Steakhouse in Encino.
Yeah.
Best, oh my gosh.
Really?
Amazing. Everyone should try it.
Really?
Everyone should go there.
Did you have steak too at the steakhouse?
No.
No.
I went for the French dip sandwich and they didn't have it. So I was kind of bummed.
Yeah.
But the Rockefeller oysters, oh my gosh.
Really?
Totally made up for it. Yeah. Amazing. Wow. So amazing.
I've never had oysters before. I mean,
really?
It kind of looks gross, no?
I
don't want to. I don't want to turn you off.
I guess it's shellfish, but I like it a lot.
Yeah. No. Mm-hmm. I mean, I eat shrimp and stuff. You know, so
I like all the shellfish, like mussels, oysters, clams. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I know oysters beyond shellfish, though. I mean, it's not like fish. I mean, isn't it like boogers? I mean,
well,
like
with Rockefeller oysters, I think it's spinach and cheese. Then they put hollandaise sauce on too.
Okay, so you hardly see the oyster.
And they were the oyster. Biggest, the largest oysters I've ever seen in my entire life.
Really?
Like one of them was
huge.
I don't know how big. Yeah. How big is that? Like don't know. I'm holding my fingers up. A
6-inch Subway sandwich or something.
Literally. Yeah. It was probably a good 4 inches.
Uh-huh. Wow.
And I've never seen oysters like that in my entire life.
Well, incredible. I'm glad for you, since you get to eat something you like and everything. Regardless of what I think about it, it doesn't matter, right?
Yeah.
I know many people love oysters. I wish I could eat them, but it's just like, you know, it has to do with how you're raised, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is, I was raised without shellfish and stuff, so it's hard for me. So, you know, or like calamari or something, right? Because the first thing that I do is think of where it came from. You know, when we eat steak and chicken and stuff like that, we don't think about that, or, you know, like whitefish and that. But
calamari is one of my favorites too.
Yeah, you know, but that's the thing. I mean, I tried it once and it tastes good, but the texture is not, it's mm-hmm. like too rubbery, you know?
So, fried calamari.
Yeah.
That's where it's at.
Yeah,
fried
I know. But then some places they actually give you the small octopi, you know, those really little ones.
Those are my favorite ones.
Really?
Yeah.
So you don't mind that it looks like that?
No.
You see, that's why, I mean, it stays with you from childhood and there's nothing you can do about it.
Right.
Somehow I managed to start eating shrimp years ago and I love them, you know.
Mm-hmm.
They're amazing, especially with Japanese food, Chinese food, you know, they always use shrimp.
Yeah. And lobster, too. I love lobster as well.
Yeah, do you?
Yeah.
See, that's another thing I haven't eaten. And people say you've got to try it. Mm-hmm. But it's that mental block,
oh,
you know?
Oh, it's great.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm a big food person. We've already established this.
Wow. So it's almost the weekend, and I was thinking that, isn't it Father's Day on Sunday? I think this Sunday is Father's Day.
Mm-hmm.
Good. Well, we'll see if I hear from my kids, you know. if they need something, I'll hear from them.
Do they ever listen to the show?
No, they never do. That's why I can say all these things.
Oh.
Yeah. That's why I can smoke dope and not tell them, and they don't know. Because they don't listen. They're the only ones in the world that don't know. Oh, man. What's wrong with the volume here? It's like it's driving me crazy. Something here is too high, too low. I don't know what's going on, but okay, whatever. Yeah, it seems like it's a little too high.
That sounds a little better.
You think?
Yeah.
Hello? No, it sounds bad. So I just won't
talk
loud.
That made everyone wake up.
Yeah, and I'll stay far from the mic and lower my voice in a few octaves. Oh, man.
It's going to drive you crazy.
Yeah, it always drives me crazy, you know that. I mean, I hear things that other people don't, but I've become very sensitive to these things. But that's okay. I'll just sit a little far from the mic. Before we bring in our special guest, I wanted to bring this up because this is like, you wonder how people still at 2014 can say these things. But Rick Perry, who is the governor of Texas, I don't know if you remember him. He was running for president a couple of years ago. And so he compares homosexuality to alcoholism. And let me tell you how. He says that I may have the genetic code that I'm inclined to be an alcoholic, but I have the desire not to do that. And I look at the homosexual issue the same way.
Oh, no.
Can you believe this? I mean, come on, you know. I think we've already established pretty much that this is not like a choice, you know.
Yeah.
I don't see why anybody would want to make a choice like that when it's so difficult to be a homosexual today in the society, you know.
Yeah.
I'm sure it always has been, but, you know, it's still, you'd expect it today to sort of like fade all this stuff, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, and people are just like totally, and this is is like a guy that was going to run for president, you know. I mean, he just, even if you think these things, don't say them, you know. I mean, these people are crazy, the stuff they say.
Well, it's almost like he's just saying it for attention.
You think?
Why else would he say that?
Because
I have no idea why else you would want to.
Because he's a conservative, you know, and they think this is a life choice.
But when you put something out in the public, especially right after everything with Donald Sterling and just everything that's happened, just.
Yeah, keep your mouth shut kind of a thing. But that's the thing. I mean, someone who goes into politics, they can't shut up. They have to talk all the time. Yeah. That's why they're there for.
Right.
You know? So, yeah, so this is the reality there. And
it's really sad.
Yeah, I know. So, let's see. Okay, all the rest of the news doesn't really matter. We have a, you know, I spend the time preparing in the morning. Then I go, let's go to our guest, you know. But for some reason, I closed the page that we have for our guest. So, but at least I remember his name. We have Michael Gluck in the studio. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Sure. So you sit here patiently, and I appreciate that and everything.
And you were nodding your head about the shellfish.
I have some thoughts on the shellfish.
Okay, let's hear about the shellfish.
I'll be honest with you. So I'm kind of in between you guys. I will eat every kind of seafood and shellfish except for oysters.
Really?
Except for oysters for kind of the same reasons that you
really
mentioned.
Does it look kind of like the texture or?
I can't get past it.
Yeah.
But all other seafood, I'm on board.
Whoa. Just not the oysters.
I know. I never really got the kosher thing down, you know, very irreverent.
Yeah, I know. I got it down, but I never really subscribed to it, you know. Mm-hmm. And I mean, when you grow up in Israel and stuff, it's like, you know, everybody is like that, you know, because the restaurants are kosher and all that stuff, you know.
Right.
But then you come here and you forget about all this stuff, you know. It's like, come on, you know, look at this great food they have here, you know. Bacon, too. I mean, I could never live without bacon now.
Not supposed to eat pork, right?
Right. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I mean, that's the thing is that you know why these things happen. Nobody ever wonders where the origin of these things come from. And the thing is that, you see, I studied biblical literature, which means that you study the Bible, but from a literature point of view, not from a religious point of view. So learned a lot of interesting things. And one of them was that back in the day, religions sort of like, I guess they connected pigs with negative things, you know. And so they made it like they decided they're going to make it an unpure animal. I mean, that's in Islam as well.
Right.
They don't eat pork as well. And so it all comes from like ancient days, you know, when stuff doesn't apply anymore.
Right.
You know, so and we still like blindly follow all this.
Mm-hmm.
And but look, some people claim that it just keeps them. Keeps the tradition going, you know, it keeps families together, whatever, communities. So, you know, if it works for them, that's fine, you know. Mm-hmm. I'm eating whatever I like, you know. And I'm going to try lobster, too. I have to.
I'll just get
a little taste from someone, you know, just like I did with the octopus.
Mm-hmm. I didn't know the origin of that. I always thought it was like 3,000 years ago, Mr. Cohen ate some raw pork and got trichinosis and died. And they said, you see?
Not at all.
Don't eat raw pork.
Not at all. That's what I'm saying. You see, they integrated it into the food, into the diet, but it was considered an impure animal.
I learned something today.
I did too. Yeah.
Don't we all, right? I know. Yeah, I always spend some time with mature men, you know. I mean, we're not all that bad, you know. So Michael, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
I understand you're visiting town from somewhere else today.
I am. Well, I'm from South Florida.
Oh, okay.
But I'm here for...
She went to school
there. Yeah, I went to
there.
Tallahassee.
Okay, awesome.
Florida State.
I'm from Hollywood, Florida.
Okay, very
cool. That's my hometown.
Yeah, wow.
And that's where you live now?
I live there.
Okay.
So Hollywood to Hollywood.
Hollywood to Hollywood.
But you haven't made the move yet, huh?
No, I haven't made the move yet, but I'm here for the big video game convention that's going on.
The
E3 convention.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's held every year here in L.A., right?
Absolutely.
And that's for all the video games and everything.
It's Nerd Central. That's why I'm here.
Really?
You miss it.
So you're a nerdy game player?
Absolutely.
Really?
Oh, totally.
Wow. When did you start playing games? I guess early on, right? Because you were born into a video game generation.
I was. Early childhood. Yeah. As soon as I could hold the controller, I got into games. Yeah.
So what did you like? Super Mario and Donkey Kong and all these things?
Yeah, even before
at that age. Really, before that.
Early, like I was playing Tetris on Game Boy. I I was playing regular Nintendo, and then I graduated into Mario, and you know, I just kept going up with the consoles. Even today, I still play games on PC.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm still in it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You see, there was a period for me where I was playing on PCs all the time. For some reason, I like it better than the consoles and stuff. But at the same time, So I would play like every war game there is, you know, all the shoot 'em up, the first person shooters,
like the World of Warcraft and all those ones.
Well, yeah, that one is more like, I mean, but that's fantasy. Do you like that one?
Yeah, I like
yeah, a lot of people like that stuff. You see, to me, it's more like I like the realistic things. So it's like military games, you know, where you go and you shoot terrorists and things like that. You know, like World War II, you shoot Nazis, things like that.
There's a whole lot of games where you can shoot Nazis. Yeah. A lot of games. That's a popular theme.
It is. Well, justifiably so. If they only do.
You know who's making the games.
Right. I know. If they only knew, they'd be featured as the bad guys in video games.
Exactly.
You know? Wow. So you grew up there in Hollywood? Is that where you were born?
I did. I was born in Miami. I grew up in Hollywood, and I lived there for 18 years until I left and went to college.
Really?
Yeah.
Do you have siblings?
I have a younger sister. She's still in South Florida.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Yeah. Is she going to get out too, you think?
No, she's going to stay. She's a child therapist, and she's got her practice set up there. She married a nice Israeli jeweler. He's got his practice down there.
Wow.
And they're set in South Florida.
There are nice Israeli jewelers?
Believe it or not, okay. she found one. Yeah.
Okay,
he's a good boy.
Say so.
My mother says so. He's a good boy.
That's good. That's important, right? Especially when it's a girl getting married. Yeah, I'm telling you.
My mother's on board, so it's all right.
Yeah. You know, I mean, the funny thing is when I was like 21, I was dating a 25, 26-year-old girl, and she wasn't Jewish either. So imagine the shock to my mom's system, you know? I mean, my kid's like with a woman 5 years older than he is. And at that age, it's a lot, you know? Mm-hmm. And not Jewish, you know? And so it's like she would never accept my girlfriend because
she was
of that,
eating shellfish and just being a horrible human
she
being.
She introduced me to all that stuff, and especially bacon, man.
Yeah, just wolfing it down,
I'm telling you, so all these mixed religions are funny, you know. So when did she get married? Long ago?
She got married, I think it was over a year now, or like about a year and a half ago.
Oh, cool.
And they're happily settled in South Florida, right near our parents and their parents. So
sounds cool.
So very,
they're all happy.
Yeah, they're happy. Yeah. Like, I'm like the black sheep, you know. I've started business, and most of my business is not in Florida.
Really?
In the video game business, so it's all, you know, a lot of it's in the West Coast and in Seattle and Texas and other places.
Right.
Yeah. Okay, cool.
So you decided to go to college after high school. Where did you go?
I went to the University of Pennsylvania in Philly.
Okay.
Oh, up north. Mm-hmm. It's cold.
I wanted to see snow for the first time. That was great for like 10 minutes.
Really?
Yeah. I never saw snow before. I was 18 years old, never saw snow in my life.
Yeah, I know. And then you're like, why did I want to, right?
No, yeah. It's like,
to live in that climate is a whole different thing.
The first day, it was amazing. I was like jumping in it and like making snowballs, and people are like, looking at me like, oh, it must be from Florida or something. Like, yeah, never seen
the Sunshine State. Wow. So this is cool. So, and what did you what did you take in school?
I did a combination of things. I did marketing, and I also did Japanese.
Oh, really?
I did.
Cool. Japanese.
Yeah, I did.
Good for you. I mean, isn't that like a huge asset? Because not many people speak that language, right?
Not a lot of people, especially nice Jewish boy from South Florida. Not a lot of those.
Not a lot
and
of
when
those.
You bust it out in a business context and you speak it relatively well, it can really
help
get
out,
people
right?
to notice. You know?
Right.
So I knew I wanted to go into games business.
And so you knew it would involve Japan because of video games and stuff like that. A lot of stuff is happening there.
Exactly. And I just had an interest in games. I had an interest in Japanese culture. I like the food, like the anime. You know, I just wanted to live in Japan for a little while. I ended up moving to Japan for about 6 months. I lived with a family there. Yeah, I got totally into the culture. Yeah.
Did you do that after school or while you were in school?
Actually, while I was still in college.
Did you do an exchange program?
Yeah, I was just in someone's house, just hanging out, speaking Japanese all day.
Wow, yeah. That's cool.
How many years did it take you to actually master Japanese?
I would say I have not yet mastered Japanese, really? And I probably never will. But I took it all in high school, all in college.
Wow.
So I did 8 years of like textbook Japanese, and then I moved there for 6 months. And today in the business, I use it frequently. Just communicating with clients.
That's cool. And people must be really impressed, like you said. You know,
if you break it out, you know, a little bit, you know, drop it in there. Don't try to like be too ostentatious about it. Just like use it occasionally. They're like, oh, that's nice.
Yeah,
a little humble. There are a lot of forms of humility in Japanese. So if you really practice those humble forms and you use them properly, then that can really make an impression.
Wow. So you had to learn the culture too, obviously, in addition to the language, right?
Oh yeah,
yeah.
Oh, absolutely, but. I like, you know, it's a respectful culture.
Right.
I like it.
It is, right? It's more like a group kind of culture, right?
It's a very complex culture. I mean, I don't know everything about it, but it's you know, there's a lot of built into the language are many levels of humility and respect that you can use. And the hardest part about the language is learning all the different levels and when to use them and what's
really, is
situationally
it,
appropriate.
Is it otherwise insulting then if you don't use the right ones?
Not if you're like me and they forgive
right,
me. You know?
Yeah, but for
you
them.
Know, yeah, if you were a native speaker and you didn't, yes, certainly. Yeah. Yeah, I could get away with anything. I'd be like, oh, at least he's trying.
Yeah, that's true. So they have to treat each other with respect, right? I mean, is it like different classes, different social classes?
No, it's more about like where you are in the company relative to other people and who's at the table with you.
Oh, really?
You know, it changes the
way. So that's in business, but how about personal lives?
Personal life, there's a little less rules around that.
Yeah.
You know, you still would use respectful forms when speaking to your parents,
right?
Which is a foreign concept here.
Exactly. You know? This is the total opposite of what we have here.
Yeah.
Here they develop a whole new lexicon to talk to their parents, my God.
Yeah.
Yeah. You see, that's the thing, you know. I mean, that's why I think a lot of people are attracted to that culture, because it is different, you know, from what we're accustomed to here.
Yeah, definitely.
I'm a fan, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan.
If you took Japanese in high school, too, so you knew from high school that you wanted to get into the video game business.
It's kind of nerdy now. You're pressing me on some nerdy stuff here. So it's like, I didn't know that I necessarily did in high school, but I knew I wanted to play games from Japan before they were released in the United States, and I wanted to be able to read Japanese so I could get it. I mean, I was really into this series called Final Fantasy, which is like a Japanese role-playing game series that, you know, it's got a pretty niche fan base, but people who are into it are really into it. And
They've made like, what, 15
yeah,
games
exactly, you're exactly. Well, they're coming, right. Probably if you count the sequels, it's probably been 15. You know, they're up to like 14 right now, and there's been a sequel or two in there. So it's just about it.
And they made a movie, too. Do you remember that
one? I do, and it was a total flop, and it put the studio in Hawaii out of business.
Right, but the thing is it was like totally revolutionary animation because it was so realistic. With people, you know?
Yeah.
And up to that point, they haven't made, like, you know, after that, I mean, Avatar came out and all these things. Mm-hmm. But to create a whole movie out of digital characters was revolutionary.
Yeah.
I do. Because, I mean, although I wasn't into the game, I was into animation at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So that was like a big event for me.
Yeah. No, that's great. I totally remember that. I was there on opening day, and it was that movie did not do that well. But I was kind of sad about that. It didn't actually have a lot to do with Final Fantasy at all. I think that was one of the problems is the plot line really didn't have anything to do. But that's why I got into Japanese, just wanted to learn how to read, you know, and then I realized I was never going to be able to read well enough to play those games. So, but then I just said, you know what, I actually really like this anyway. I'm just going to keep going with it.
Exactly, and wait till it gets translated.
And then I just said, oh, now there's another purpose. I'm going into games business, and now I'm going to keep going, even though I'm never going to be able to read.
Yeah.
I'm going to be illiterate for life.
So essentially, your general idea was, I want to do something with video games in my career, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Because you figured, I love this so much, why not?
Absolutely, yeah.
Right. My son should do the same thing, too. I mean, my son is, like, totally into these games, you know, gets them the day they come out. And I'm to blame, you know, because, I mean, I got him into this when they were early on. I mean, my daughter is older, so I'm talking 1990. I got her into like, well, she was born in 90, but let's say, you know, 91 already, she was exposed to computers, computer games and everything. So, but it's, I mean, that's this generation, right? I mean, you're born with it, you know, and you know, I don't think that anybody has to apologize for liking video games.
You know what? It's just, it's what we grew up with.
Yeah, you know? Exactly. Yeah, it's part of this generation, you know. And when you see people like glued to their gadgets and stuff, you know, that's another thing. I mean, yeah, there's some things that are wrong with it, but at the same time, that's the generation,
right.
You know, and you have
Completely.
To understand that. Just like our you know, our parents didn't understand us, and before that, you know,
mm-hmm.
it just always seems to be that way. So. So you finished college and
yep.
and you knew English and marketing and everything. What did you do then?
So when I finished college, I took my dream job. I got an opportunity to work at Electronic Arts, video
uh-huh.
game publisher in Northern California. And
right.
I always wanted to be in games. So
yeah.
I moved to Northern California.
Really?
And I took the
job. I thought they were here. Aren't they here in Southern
they
California?
They have an office, too, as well.
I see. Yeah. But they're centered in Northern California?
More people up there. It's a more big operation going on up
really?
There.
Like yeah. what, in the Bay Area?
Exactly. Redwood City.
Oh, really? Mm-hmm. Okay. So Silicon Valley. That makes
yeah,
sense.
Exactly.
Wow.
What did you do in the company?
I was a market research analyst
okay,
when
so
I first
to do
started.
With what you graduated.
Yeah, that's kind of how mm-hmm. the original seed for the business that I started later was originated from the first job that I had, which was doing
really?
Market research internally.
Mm-hmm. So then you really learned a lot about the industry and
I
stuff.
Did. I had studied marketing and research in
right.
school, but then I learned the practical application of talking to consumers and understanding how to have a conversation with consumers and get their feedback on the video games that the company was making.
Right. Did they let you be involved in the production part of it as well, the design and all that?
Later on, I did. I started yeah. off in the research group, and then later on, I moved into the studio. I was a producer on The Sims
really?
For a little bit.
How cool.
Yeah.
Oh, very cool.
So I did a couple different jobs there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So
very
that you
nice.
Expand and
yeah, I wanted to try out
experiment.
Making games
right.
too.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You see, I was I dabbled in the computer game industry back in it was 93. Okay, so that's some time ago. But I moved to Vegas because I got a job with a company called Westwood Studios. I don't
oh,
know
yeah.
if you remember
of
them.
Of course.
They've been
made
eaten
Command
up.
And Conquer.
Right, they Command and Conquer. Okay, well, that's the thing. At the time they were doing only like 2D games. And then they started wanting to get into 3D. And I had been doing 3D animation here. You know, I had a company. So then I couldn't handle having my own business at the time. So a couple of years later, I sold it, moved to Vegas, and started working on 3D animation there to visualize Command and Conquer. Eventually, it became like one of the biggest games of all times, you know,
wow.
with a million
mm-hmm.
sequels and stuff. But I remember my vision for it was for the games was way ahead of my time, you know, because the hardware couldn't handle what I was envisioning at that point, you know. So it's very interesting to be involved in that, you know, but
yeah,
it's
I
like
bet.
A whole industry. I think the hardest thing. I mean, obviously, coding this and programming it is hard, but I think designing the game would probably be the hardest part of it, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, at the level of production I was really entry level. So a lot of what I focused on was identifying the bugs and putting together yeah. the submission for the ESRB, which is the rating board for the game. So I didn't
right.
have a whole lot of say in
right.
the decisions, but I... You know, I was working with people who did, so...
Right. So yeah. you became familiar with...
Yeah, familiar.
...how things are going on.
Yeah.
And how long were you there?
I was there for 3 years.
3 years?
Yeah, absolutely.
And then what, you decided, okay, I learned enough, now I want to do my own thing, or what?
Well, you know what it was, is I had worked on the market research side, and then I had worked on the production side. So I saw both the
right.
publishing and the development side, and there was one area of the way that the business was working that I saw opportunity for improvement, and that was in the market research. So what we would do is hire agencies to come in and provide focus groups and surveys to understand what our consumers were thinking about the games.
Right.
And the agencies that would come in and do these focus groups, they would generally do anywhere between 4 and 6 focus groups. And a focus group is 6 to 8 people in a room, gamers talking about video games, sometimes playing early versions of video games, giving their feedback on it. And for this 6 to 8 person group for 2 hours, these agencies were charging, you know, $10,000 for a group, and they would do 4 to 6 of these groups. So, you know, at the end of 2 to 3 days, the bill was $40,000 to $60,000. Not only was it very expensive, but the turnaround time for us to receive the feedback was anywhere between 2 and 4 weeks. So, in video game terms, that's a very long time.
Long time.
So, not only was it quite expensive for a very small group of individuals, but it was so late to get the feedback that oftentimes we didn't have time to act on the results that came back.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
So I saw this system that I thought there was a lot of area of opportunity to improve, and it was consistent with my educational background, and I had some work experience. So I thought, you know, there's a way to do this better, and that's what I wanted to create.
Wow, very cool. Mm-hmm. So what are the steps that you took next?
Yeah, so the first thing I did is I went to my boss, and I was working on The Sims at the time, and I said, hey, you know, we're spending $40,000 to $60,000 for a couple days of these groups, and by the time we get the results back, it's too late for us to really make decisions. You know, I've done independent research at this point. I've researched and concluded that it doesn't cost $10,000 to have a conversation with six people. It can actually be done for a lot less, believe it or not.
But many people don't realize it, I guess, huh?
You know, I think they realized it, and that's what helped. It was more that there was no other option. It was just, you know, there were no other alternatives to that, to the large firms that were providing these services. And I don't think anyone was really happy with it. It wasn't really a better solution. And also I said, you know, wouldn't it be great if we could get results back in time to actually do something with them, you know, to make decisions. And so I approached him with this concept, and he was very receptive. And he said, you know what, this is a great thing. And it was a good time because the game I was working on was just finishing up. So I had a choice, either find another game to jump on or go to another company or leave and start up my own. So he said he would be willing to give me one project if I were to start this company, and he would give me one chance to prove it out. And that's how it started.
Really? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you did that within the company though, right?
Yeah, my time was ending. It was about to wrap up. I had like a month left. Okay. And so that's when I approached him, and I said, I'm thinking about leaving and starting up this research firm. Would you give me a chance?
So you did leave, and you started up your company, and then he gave you the one chance to kind of prove that.
Like became your first client type of thing.
Exactly. And not like a legal obligation that he had. There was no contract. I was still an employee at the time. It was just kind of informal, like, I'll give you a shot.
Mm-hmm.
And
very cool.
And then
so
I left.
That was a break for you.
It was a huge break, and it was only possible from having worked inside the company first.
Right.
So you would probably encourage people to also like do internships and things like that just to get a foot in the door, right?
I think it's the whole ball game, you know.
Really?
I think it would have been impossible for me to have created this business coming from the outside.
Right.
I had to start from the inside, make relationships, and then treasure those relationships, and that becomes the basis for the beginning of the business.
Right. And then people like you get hired, and the people that just send a resume without doing anything, they get forgotten, you know, they get overlooked because you've got to make the contacts. So what did you call the company?
A company called VG Market, which stood for Video Game Market.
Oh, really?
It was a video game market research firm.
Okay. So, and you started that where, up north?
I did. I started in San Francisco originally.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. And that first chance that you got, everything worked out. And was it just you alone?
At the time, it was just me. I was living in an apartment in Redwood City by myself.
Uh-huh.
I grabbed my best friend from elementary school. I said, we're doing this. We're starting the business. We went out and we were prepared. We knew we had done our research. We knew how we were going to recruit the people. And we knew what equipment we needed to execute it. I had $5,000 in savings that I had accumulated after all the taxes and everything was still left after working at the company. And I used that $5,000 to pay for the equipment I needed to run that first project.
Right.
And I didn't have any investors or any funding. It was just that savings that I had saved up.
That's the best way to start a business. Then you don't owe anybody anything, you know.
If you can, you
don't have to carry debt for so many years. Yeah.
The nature of the business afforded me the possibility because I didn't need a lot of inventory, a lot
it's
of
more
R&D.
Service.
Exactly. Yeah. Service business. So it's just business. My time and my efforts.
Right.
So we went out and we executed a project that would have cost him $40,000 to $50,000. And would have taken him 2 to 4 weeks. We did the same exact thing for $10,000. And after we did the project, we just stayed up all night and wrote the report. And we came in the next morning
really?
And delivered it.
Whoa.
Wow.
And it was just unheard of. So he was impressed with us, and to the point that he sent an email out to the rest of the group saying, hey, everybody should give this a try. And that was how the business was born.
Wow, very, very impressive stuff.
Yeah.
So you partnered up with someone you knew, right? Was it a friend?
Yeah, it was my friend from 6 years old.
Really?
Yeah.
So, and you guys get along?
Oh, we get along great. It was, I really didn't take him on as a partner. I didn't know if that would have been a good, it might have hurt the friendship. I wasn't sure. And
yeah.
It wasn't, I didn't really need a partner in this business. I really needed somebody to like do some work. So he was my first hire. Really,
okay.
But my first hire was a friend.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Does he still work for you?
He does.
Yeah. Wow.
He's still here. Yeah.
That's
very cool.
Cool.
So I imagine then you start growing. Did you start going to other companies as well and do the same thing?
Yeah, absolutely. So first it started at the company where I had worked previously, which was EA. And within a year, most of EA's titles were working with us in some capacity. We were touching most of the games. And then after that first year, we took the concept that we had proven out to all the other game companies out there. And we said, hey, this is what we're doing. This is the price that people are paying. This is the speed that they're getting. And wouldn't you like this too? And it was just a very routine, quick process of getting everyone on board because they were looking for a solution.
Filled a niche that was needed.
Yeah.
Good for you. So it's like perfect timing also, right? You have to be there at the right time as well to succeed in business.
Yeah.
And because you never know, circumstances change all the time. The business environment changes all the time. So how long have you been doing this now? How long have you had the company?
So this is a seventh year now.
Really?
Wow. Yes.
Congratulations.
Thank you so much.
And so you're still up north, right? You guys are still in San Francisco?
So the company, as soon as the company started to grow, I moved the office to South Florida.
Okay.
And
you figured it might as well be near the family,
that's right?
Yeah. And you didn't really need to be here because you could travel and...
Yeah, we service the world. I mean, we do research in all countries, Western Europe, Asia, United States. We go to all major cities in the United States. The nature of the business doesn't necessitate a physical location.
Right,
you know.
Right. Very cool.
So obviously, you just continued to keep hiring more people. The more demand that you got, you just had to keep hiring and keep growing and growing the business.
Absolutely. So, right away, it started with the one company and then it grew into the Bay Area companies. And then we went outside of the Bay Area and we continued to grow. And today, we service more than 50 game companies. But along the way, we expanded beyond games. So we took on mobile technology companies. We took on hardware, headphones, telecom, non-gaming mobile apps, other things that were in the tech and media space. And we sort of expanded out to those areas. So today, we're one of the leading providers of market research to the video game industry, but also a strong provider of research to neighboring industries.
Right. So according to my poor math, at $10,000 a shot with so many clients, you probably made like $3 trillion last week, last year, right? I mean, this guy was sitting next to a gold mine here. You know?
Yeah.
That would have been a big tax bill. So.
Yeah, I know. But I mean, that's my math. You know, what can I say? But you're doing pretty well, which is very cool.
Thank you.
Very cool. So you came to E3 this week. How many days is the show going on for?
Yeah, the show is all week, basically. And, you know, I came in yesterday and there were just some meetings that, you know, I wanted to have.
Right. Mm-hmm. So you probably meet people that you work with normally anyway, right? Going to this convention and everything.
For me, that's the whole point.
Yeah.
It's not about drumming up a new business really. It's more about just reconnecting with existing friends.
Right. Wow, that's fun. So you grew up doing what you love. You make good income, I imagine, from it. And you're living nicely, and you get to be on radio shows, you see?
I'm here with you, Sam and Charlotte.
It's an amazing thing. You know, you got to definitely go after your dreams, you know?
Yeah.
And that's what I say, you know? I mean, some people don't have the big dreams and stuff. They want to be like an artist or whatever. Do it, you know? As long as you love it, do it, you know? It doesn't matter. But preferably do it where there's money in it, right? But artists don't really care.
For entrepreneurs out there, what would you say is like the top five things that they should focus on, I guess, when they're starting their business?
Yeah, well, I'll start with the main thing. It's not the first thing in terms of the logistics of starting the business, but treasure your relationships, treasure your friendships. Just the basic stuff your mother taught you about being a good person and mm-hmm. being generous and nice. I mean, that's the whole game,
yeah.
Right? So the single biggest determinant of success or failure every step of the way for me has been who are my friends? Do I have friends working in companies? Do people know who I am? Do I have a good reputation and a good rapport? I mean, that's so much more important than anything that I learned in college about how to execute business transactions.
Yeah.
So that's the first thing right away. If you've got a burned bridge, repair that bridge, reach out, fix it. That will come back.
Don't want to leave any bad blood out there.
Bad
huh?
blood is that is a, will kill
karma.
You pretty fast. Oh, karma, that's real stuff. I mean, it'll get you in a very practical way. So, so just, you know, first step is just be a golden rule, you know, just follow the golden rule, I guess. And then to get more practical in terms of execution, you know, you can, there are people younger, I'm 31 years old, you know, there's people younger, much younger than I am, producing apps on phones that are worth billions of dollars. I mean, doing much higher revenue than my service business ever will. And that's a path you can go. You know, if you've got an idea and you can wrangle the funds to the millions that you need to grow this thing, and you're comfortable giving away a good amount of equity in exchange for that opportunity and going that route, hey, power to you. You know, that's you can be very wealthy and successful that way. But it's a very also difficult route. You know, how many people try and fail, and how many people are really able to secure that funding? So I would urge people to also consider a more conservative startup approach, which would be from the service business standpoint, which is what I did. You know, I started my business with $5,000. I didn't have any funds raised at all. It was just what I had saved and my own efforts. And I was able to, you know, with that $5,000 that I put in on day one, when I was 24 years old, you know, when I was 25 years old, that $5,000 had become $1 million.
Wow.
And when I was 30, that $5,000 had become $20 million.
So really?
The service business is a viable way to grow.
What did you say?
Touch him for luck.
Oh, yeah. I mean, my God, I'm in the same room. That's good enough. Maybe it'll rub off on me.
I mean, there's people out there doing gangbusters, you know. So you look at that and you say, oh, I want to be the next big app. I want to be the billion-dollar idea. I'm not the billion-dollar idea. And there's people that are. So but there's also a route that you can go in the service side where you can start up for less. You can, it's affordable, and you can still do very well that way. So I would say, hey, maybe instead of swinging for outer space, you know, just you could swing within Earth, and you can still be successful too.
Wow. So I wasn't far off from the 3 trillion, you know? Maybe 2.5. Okay, I'm sorry. Very cool. So, I mean, you must be proud of yourself. You've established something like that and on your own, right? Do you have any partners now? Or
I have no partners.
Yeah, it's the best way, right? Yeah. I mean, the thing is, because when you get a partner, it's sometimes like stifles you, right? Stifles your growth. They're pulling in different directions and stuff. And I know that from having spoken to people and stuff, I never had a partner. I don't think I could handle having one, you know, so... Mm-hmm. So good for you. You know, I guess the important thing is to surround yourself with good people and not necessarily a partner. You know, people can work for you.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think in some cases, you know, I've seen partnerships that have worked brilliantly. And I think in my case, it was the best path to just do it myself.
Right.
But there are, I've seen other, I don't want to completely write off that path either. I mean, it could be a good route for some people.
Right.
For me, it just didn't make sense to go that way.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, you know, for some people like Apple and Microsoft and all that, you know, I mean, partnerships work very well. So, yeah, you can't write it off or anything. So, do you have anything to promote? I mean, the thing is that your market is pretty much, what? Okay. Someone's whispering to him, and he's totally distracted, and so am I. So we're going to throw her out of here in a second if she doesn't stop. No, AB, we love you, AB. You're always bring us great guests. Do you have anything you want to promote or just... are you looking for a wife or anything? Or we can promote that.
Sam, you're apparently matchmaker, Sam.
Hell, you know.
Talk show host, radio
yeah,
show host.
Exactly, yeah.
Matchmaker.
Matchmaker.
I got a great girlfriend. We're very happy.
Awesome.
I'm here. I'm just grateful to be on this show.
Okay.
I'm not, I haven't done a ton of interviews before. And I'm just,
right.
It's really cool for me to be here. In terms
awesome.
Of things to promote, well... I love music. I have I'm a hobbyist with it. I play the piano. I have my whole life. And I started up a band. It started just for fun, but it kind of grew into something really great.
Really?
But it's called Critical Hit, and it's a video game music band.
Really?
And my partner, I do have a partner in the band, so here we go, partnerships.
Yeah.
I have a partner in the band. He is the composer for the video game World of Warcraft, StarCraft,
really?
Diablo. He's a composer at Blizzard Entertainment, and his name is Jason Hayes. And together we created this band called Critical Hit. And the band is essentially comprised of award-winning musicians in pop music and in rock music. And also a lot of these people have recorded on soundtracks for video games too. And we brought all these musicians together and we created this band. And we take video game music and we arrange it for the band. And it's a hybrid of classical and rock. So we've got violin and cello, but we've also got electric guitar and drum set. So it's kind of a mixed sound. And we arrange this video game music. So we'll play the Mario theme, the Tetris theme, theme from World of Warcraft live. And last night we performed at Nokia Theater, LA Live. There were 5,000 people there. We played as part of a video game concert called Video Games Live. And we came up and did a few pieces during the show.
Wow, cool.
And so that's this band that we're doing now. And it's fun. You know, it's something I created for enjoyment. And
cool.
It's going
so it's called Critical Hit. Can we find it online?
Yeah, it's criticalhitband.com.
Okay, and we can listen to the music and stuff.
Yeah, exactly. We're going to San Diego Comic-Con next.
Oh, really?
Yeah, we're going to do another show there with a Video Games Live concert series.
And, wow. So you're totally immersed in the industry. You're doing what you love. You're around people that you like that are like-minded and love the same things. That's cool, you know. What are a couple of your favorite video games of all time? Do you have any?
Yeah, so I started off with the Final Fantasy series. That's how I got into games. And as you pointed out, you know exactly how many there are, which I was amazed. I was like, whoa, wait, let me count. Oh, you're right, yeah. So, yes, I got into that, and I've played them all. I'm more partial towards the older ones.
Yeah.
I guess that's just me being old. And then these days I play a PC game called StarCraft 2.
Really?
It's it's kind of niche, a little nerdy.
Yeah.
But it's a real, it's called real time strategy.
Right.
You know, you're like moving a lot of units at once. And
yeah, I like that. That's like how Command and Conquer,
you know,
was,
it's
right?
It's Command and Conquer genre.
For,
you know?
For space, right?
Exactly. It's, yeah. It's a competitor to.
Right, right.
It's exactly the same genre.
Right. And it's pretty cool. I mean, it's also like a SimCity and stuff where you actually build things and then they run themselves and. And all that kind of stuff.
Yeah,
you know?
The difference is you'll get your butt kicked by like
exactly.
a 12-year-old.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, Michael Gluck, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
And can people find you online? I mean, do you want them to? Like Twitter, Facebook, anything?
I know
like
how
that?
You feel about all those social networks, Sam. I was
no, I love them. I mean, you can't live without them. You know?
Yeah. No, I'm on. I've got VG Market is at vgmarket.com.
Okay.
And I've got a website at michaelgluck.com.
So, okay, sounds good. So we can follow you there.
Yeah, send me a note.
Very cool. Very cool. Well, you see, I'm telling you, Jewish people are smart. You gotta accept that.
I think they are.
You. Yeah. You gotta accept that.
I think they are very smart.
They say we have horns, but we don't. You know,
no horns.
No horns. All right, Michael. Thank you so much. Enjoy the rest of your trip. When are you going back home?
I'm going back home on Sunday.
Okay, cool. Well, enjoy the sunshine. Well, I'm sure you have sunshine there too.
We got
right?
it all. We got, yeah. You guys got it all here, though.
Yeah. I know we don't have as much humidity, right?
You guys got it all. I'm telling you.
Yeah, I know. Jackpot. This is paradise.
It's paradise right here.
Yeah.
Thank you so much
awesome.
For having me.
Awesome. Thank you. And thanks everybody for listening. Today is Thursday, so we will be back here tomorrow. And if you think it's a weekend tomorrow, we got a surprise for you. One more day. See you then.
Bye. You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Charlotte right here on LA Talk Radio.